I'm thrilled to be here today, participating in this conversation. So thank you, the Philadelphia Society. Thank you, Bill McClay, for the invitation. I only have one complaint. We should have had champagne instead of coffee this morning to properly celebrate this announcement. Most of my comments, and I'm going to probably will be heavily influenced by the fact almost a decade at UFM and all what I have learned about UFM, especially this year is our 50th anniversary. We have had a lot of discussions and conversations, reflections about the 50 years of our institution. And probably also it will be influenced in the fact that I was telling Pano Canelos that I've been 14 years working to establish a similar project, and hopefully we will soon be announcing the establishment of a new university in Europe. That is another classical liberal higher ed institution. So our speaker has presented a very compelling case for restoring liberal education to restore the higher ed that aspires to search for the truth and perhaps in doing so also restore the classical liberal society in which their citizens have learned to take full responsibility of their actions. As he says, higher ed is, or this should be, what moves us from the what to the why. But the way higher ed fulfills this role today is schizophrenic, and we find ourselves in the current situation between relativism and totalitarianism. Pano Canelo says, for higher ed to fulfill its purpose, it must be grounded in three principles: remembrance, independence, and transcendence. The solution will have to recover the collective memory, picking up the thread of the conversation. We'll have to foster independence and liberty to free men from the prison house of his class, race, time, place, background, family, and even his nations, as Robert Minor Hutchinson said. And we'll have to search for the truth, for the why, for transcendence. I am also skeptic that the situation we are in can be solved from within. According to the announcement we heard, the solution of the malaise of universities is to build higher education institutions that maintain a conversation about the why. A university or several universities, a generation of alternative universities devoted to the pursuit of truth, and I'm quoting, fully committed to freedom of inquiry, freedom of conscience, and civil discourse. Fully committed to freedom of inquiry, freedom of conscience, and civil discourse. That institution he's proposing and courageously establishing will be fiercely independent financially, intellectually, and politically. So I enthusiastically applaud the effort that Pano Canelos and his colleagues, and I wish them great success, since if they are successful, I think that this is going to be a big step toward the classical liberal society that many of us would like to see. Now, I believe that there are four levels of interactions, of relationship between education and liberty. And we should be dealing with each of the four levels in order to have better chances, to have good chances of being successful in these type of projects. Those four levels are, in my opinion, the following. First, the content level, or the what. Second, the methodological level, or how do we learn. Then the institutional architectural level, or how do we teach or deliver the service, and what I would call the marketplace level or the system level, the playing ground level, or how are we able to compete, how are we able to innovate, how do we innovate in the marketplace. So in his presentation, Panokanellos refers to two of them, and it was really very inspiring. The first, the what, or the content level, the answer is the big questions of life. And the second one, how do we learn? Well, through a conversation that reestablishes our collective memory and searches for the truth. What I'm still missing, and I'm sure that he and his colleagues have thought about it, but I think it's very important to think, discuss, and have a very conscious proposal in that sense, is the third and the fourth level. The institutional architecture of any project and the playing field, the relation with other institutions, the relation with the marketplace. In terms of the institutional architecture, the governance, the existing set of incentives to deliver the service of education by which we expect students to learn should reflect the same spirit of freedom than the content. Also, those incentives will have to be able to resist a lot of pushback, as he said, and in order to maintain the north of our compass, of our mission. So, in this level, questions like, who will govern the university? How is the board elected? How is the president elected? What is the role of trustees? What is the balance of power between the different government bodies? Who authorizes the professors? Who hires the professors? Who decides who teaches? How are professors removed? Who decides how long a professor's offer to teach will be extended? Will there be academic freedom? What will be the interpretation of academic freedom? Will professors have any say in how the institution is managed? What will be the administrative academic structure? How are the budget of each unit department approved? How are the resources allocated internally? Will cross subsidies will be allowed? Is there going to be research and teaching? Is there going to be a firewall between both of them? Who pays for research? How will the institution be financed? Will the university receive subsidies? All these questions relate to how we organize the service and will determine it as much as the what we teach and the how students learn, the consistency of any university project with the idea of individual liberty, since it will A, show whether it lives by its own principles, and B, determine whether the organization will be able to resist an attempt to change the path and to stay faithful to the founder's intent. As the 19th century French economist Gustave de Molinari said, a communistically organized institution will hardly move forward any liberal society. And I'm not saying that Pano and his friends are organizing a communist organization at all, but I think it is very important to pay attention to the structure, to the incentives. I'm sure that this has been discussed in the context of this great new project, and those are very complex issues. However, as he pointed out as a problem, that today's universities' administrators are elevated over professors, I wonder what is the type of relations that these and many other institutions are going to have? What are the type of governance rules that the new generation of institutions are going to have? Should it be a problem that administrations are elevated over professors? In fact, I believe that if professors are elevated over administrators, or even at the same level, universities will tend to the mean, as Henry Money would say. The problem at this level is how to have skin in the game, how to respect private property. In that sense, if administrators are the carriers of private ownership or founders' intent, there are good reasons for the administrator to be elevated over professors. Should professors have any saying in the way university is managed? Well, I want to bring here an anecdote from Manuel Ayao, the founder of Universidad Francisco Marroquín. Shortly after UFM started, there was the first meeting of the Senate of the university, and the vice president asked all the professors and the deans to gather. And Manuel Ayao heard about this and went to the meeting, and of course the vice president said, hey, perhaps the president wants to say something. He said, yes, I want to say something. I want to say that this Senate is now abolished. And I believe that if he would have not done this, we wouldn't be celebrating today UFM 50th anniversary. Or at least we will be celebrating the anniversary of a very different type of institution. Who should decide what to teach? Is it the dean? Is it the board? How do departments operate? Do they operate by internal pricing? Do they operate by favors? Do they operate by friendship with the president or the deans? These are very important questions. I remember once Jack Templeton asked me to speak about how UFM works, how we have internal prices, how we have a marketplace inside UFM. And he liked that idea. He wanted me to present that to deans in the U.S. I remember how the faces of the deans, they were horrified when we said that we have internal prices, that everything, even the classrooms, we have a marketplace for classrooms. And when there is more demand for classrooms, for example, 7 a.m. in our case, the price of classrooms are higher, and that each department has to pay for the classroom or pay for the camera, pay for the microphone. So all those things are things that were heavily discussed in 1971 in a symposium organized by Pierre Goodrich, by Liberty Fund, Education in a Free Society. And I would urge everyone who is starting a project like this to go back to those readings, Education in a Free Society, and go through the complex issue of all the incentives, the set of incentives internally, not just what we teach and the methodology we use. And finally, I would like to refer to the fourth level of interaction between liberty and education. That is the playing field. The playing field, the shape of the market in which one operates, the rule of norms of the game, the way in which we can interact, emulate, and compete with other institutions will definitely influence our ability to succeed in our goal to reestablish a liberal, classical liberal, higher education in which students prepare for human flourishing, for emancipation, for being responsible persons. Of course, there are rules that are difficult to be changed since they have been imposed, and you might learn about coercion in the hard way if you don't obey or conform. But many norms of conduct are chosen or are part of the tradition in the sector that might or might not foster competition, innovation, and freedom, which is ultimately the dynamic that will allow us to have hope, not just in one project, but in the free market process. For example, it will be hard to change the labor rules between professors or administrators in the university. Similarly, it will be hard to change urban laws related to building educational buildings. However, there are many norms that do not foster a competitive market that can be easily changed. Questions like, will we participate in accreditation? Will we participate in rankings? Will we become any new disruptive, will we welcome any new disruptive initiative in higher ed, or will we seek protection? Are we going to accept subsidies? Are we going to accept, reject, or denounce subsidies for studying and teaching? Are we going to cultivate the existence of government department dedicated to education? The more our position in those questions are on the side of allowing diversity in the sense of free competition, the more chances of success we will have. Let the free market decide. Let's respect private property. Let the whimsical customer, as Ludwig von Mises would say, and the civil society, and not the bureaucrats and the privileged private organizations, to be sovereign. A marketplace like this did exist in the past, and I would like to refer to two examples. One is a very old example. In the 16th and 17th century, universities in Europe, and especially in Spain, were universities that follow that had this type of relation between liberty and the different levels I mentioned in a way that fostered personal responsibility all over Spain, Italy, and France. In the Universidad de Salamanca or the Universidad de Alcalá de Henares, where universities where the type of content you had was a content about the limitations of power. Even tyrannicide was taught. Can you imagine that? Tyrannicide. Inflation was taught as something that was evil. On the methodological level, you had questioning. Questioning was the big methodological tool. A dissertation at those times, a dissertation took 1 week. So imagine 1 week of questions compared to what happens now. Private property, you could see private property all over. No tenure. Academic freedom was understood in the way that was connected to the purpose of the institution. And no senate, of course. And there were chains. There were chains around the different universities. Those chains meant that the jurisdiction of that university was different than the jurisdiction outside the campus. So there was competition. There was a marketplace where there was competition. So and UFM is another example. Manuel Ayao, in year 1985, managed to change the marketplace, the rules of the game, and since year 1985 in Guatemala, we have free competition of universities. Perhaps we can talk more about this later. Just to finish, I believe that, like Pano Canelos, that a vast majority of universities today have become probably the enemy of a meaningful higher education, the type of institution that would foster freedom and responsibility. And as much as I appreciate the efforts of some extraordinary, generously philanthropists supporting the creation and maintenance of centers inside the current corrupted universities, in doing so, we might alleviate the malaise of universities, but we will not be able to change the situation from within. We need to change the system. We need to make a stand for showing what can be done. We need new institutions that are conceived to foster persons who take full responsibility of their actions. To be successful in this quest, we will have to be courageous, constant, and coherent. This is why in every attempt we should pay exquisite attention to each of the four levels in which education and liberty are related. Thank you.